welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Bob Scott, former co-founder of the Kansas City Fellowship and the author of three books, the latest of which is Some Say They Blundered, Breaking My Decades of Silence on Mike Bickle, the Kansas City Prophets, and the International House of Prayer. Bob, it's good to be back and to talk about all things mess in the Christian world today. We've gone through the series talking about how things got to where they are, and you mentioned you wanted a break from that to talk about dominionism and Seven Mountain Mandate type of stuff, which is, it's interesting because I like to take things from multiple different perspectives. And as you know, I've talked about this with multiple people at this point. The last one was Jed Hartley, but talking about just the differences between it and Christianity. And there's some history there with which, you know, this history goes back millennia. You can go back as far back as you want to go, which you and I will talk about. But in the near history, if you go back to where my research on the latest book goes back to Christian identity, and really that's the root of what became the Latter Rain movement. Mm-hmm. Largely it was embedded in Pentecostalism, but there was this notion that the United States was being infiltrated. But through Christian identity, they taught that there was basically subhumans and the children of God. And It developed from British Israelism. They thought that the United mm-hmm. States and Canada and the British Isles were the lost descendants of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. But the opposing thought to that, once it became Christian identity, was there is this lesser class of humans. They mm-hmm. used different terms, but basically false Jews that had taken over. They've taken over our entertainment industry. They're embedded in our politics. They're basically every aspect of life, and we need to fight back. We need to take this back.
Wasn't it the Elders of Zion or something? Wasn't there a publication?
It's a crazy interesting history, and it's more closely related to the New Apostolic Reformation than mm-hmm. people realize. So C. Peter Wagner, who is the one who named it the New mm-hmm. Apostolic Reformation, was at a Fuller seminary. Charles Fuller, who founded the seminary, was a leading ranking member of the they were called the Defenders of the Christian Faith, which was led by Gerald Burton Winrod. Gerald Burton Winrod was a no-name preacher from Kansas, just humble guy, no money, allegedly humble. He goes to Germany and has counsel before the war. He has counsel with Hitler. He suddenly comes back with massive amounts of money, massive, wow. and launches this huge campaign. The campaign included Christian fundamentalism, but also with that, he carried with him the copy of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and he starts distributing it. So he's distributing it, and Henry Ford of the Ford Motor Company.
Yeah, I remember that.
Dearborn
Independent. Reading it, I should say. I wasn't alive, but I remember reading about this.
Yeah, so they're spreading it too through the Dearborn Independent, but what happened essentially was it was coming into the nation at a time whenever the politicized propaganda was that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was working with the false Jews, and they were trying to shift the country into a direction that essentially was leading towards Armageddon. And we'll get into it more as we go, but essentially what they wanted to do was they wanted to retake the mountains. They wanted to take mm-hmm. over the entertainment industry and block the false Jews, the government block the false Jews. And it became deeply rooted into the Latter Rain theology. If you understand the history of what I'm talking about, you'll understand that it is connected to Latter Rain. Well, then from Latter Rain came the NAR. So what we have today, it's not new like people think. This is history right. repeating itself then, but as you and I will talk, it goes back for millennia.
Well, parallel to what you're talking about, and you're going to have to forgive me, or you're going to have to help me because I'm having a brain glitch right now. But there was also a movement where Winston Churchill, Helen Keller, Theodore Roosevelt were all talking about the fact that there were a superior race. What's the word I'm talking? I keep saying euthanasia, but it wasn't euthanasia, but it was like an E word.
It was eugenics. They were
eugenics. That's the word I'm looking for.
And you know, people don't realize that that was taught in American schools as though it was a science. People were breeding. Basically, we can breed ourselves a certain way and outbreed all of the bad quality genes. And
well, I'll give you an example of somebody, Charles Lindbergh. Our modern world doesn't really fully grasp that Charles Lindbergh in the 1930s was the rock star. Like, he was the man, right? Because of the fact that he had flown to Paris nonstop over the ocean. But Lindbergh bought into the whole eugenics thing. And of course, later it was discovered that he, like, you know, this is the other scandal. If you go to the English crown, there was a reason why Edward abdicated, because Edward and Mrs. Simpson were tied. They loved Hitler. Like, there was a whole bunch of people in the British aristocracy that loved the German efficiency. They loved all of that. They thought it was a better way of life, and they thought they were a superior race, right? Well, it was discovered years later, after Lindbergh had died, there was two groups of kids in Germany that claimed that he was their father. And everybody used to laugh at him, right? And sure enough, once DNA testing became a thing, they tested him, and you know, he had not only a family in the United States, he had two families in Germany, and his whole idea was, I have superior genes. I need to populate. Like, I need to get as many women pregnant. I mean, it's really twisted now, you know, in 2025, but 100 years ago, that was a thing. Like, there, I mean, I'm talking about Winston Churchill, Helen Keller, who's blind and deaf, is into it. Like, there's all these really famous, high-profile people that all accepted this. And, of course, as most people know, so did, Margaret Mead or whoever that started Planned Parenthood? It was all driven by this need of trying to, you know, control the birth of black people.
So in my latest book, The Christian Identity to the NAR, I go back through some of that history. I actually got most of it from Michael Barkun's book, Religion and the Racist Right. He talks about how all of this developed, but he only started at a point. So I went back, I traced it as best I could back before him. And King James, whenever he was translating the King James Bible, I catch all kinds of flack when I mention this, but this is fact. King James thought that he was descended directly from King David because he bought into this thing. So he's translating the Bible because we're the lost tribes of Israel.
King James, who loved little boys.
Yeah, it's a mess, man, when you think about it.
It really is. Humanity is so broken. I think, you know, to basically give all of this, you know, an oversimplified generalization word, it's about elitism. You know what I mean? And it's plagued humanity since the beginning of time. That's why I kind of wanted to touch on this Dominion thing, because interestingly, because of this Vance Bolter thing, I've been contacted by these newspaper reporters, right, who are starting out from a paradigm. And their paradigm is religious right bad.
Yeah.
Right? Religious right wants to take over the world. And so they're all armed with dominionism, right? And so they're all trying to tie the knot between, the link between Vance and dominionism and whatever, because in their view, that's the problem, right? So here I am. Well, just sidebar here, what maybe most people don't realize is the vast majority of the press is under 40 years old. That is the generation who has never really taught history. I mean, and world history, like, hardly at all, right? So I'm having these conversations with these reporters, and I'm trying to explain to them that dominionism as a concept is not uniquely Christian. And it sounds weird, but they're like, what do you mean? Like, they think that the concept of dominionism is something that Christians came up with. And I said, stop a second. Do you understand what's going on in the world of the Muslim world? and the religion of Islam. I'm like, well, what do you mean? I said, do you know what their goal is? They want to build a caliphate. I go, everything you're seeing right now that's happening in the world is with the Muslim community. The reason why they're here in the United States, the reason why they're into Europe, the reason why they gave Nelson Mandela $200 million to open up the border so Muslims could immigrate into South Africa is because they're building a caliphate. They believe, just like, you know, many in the religious right believe that Jesus is coming back and he's going to set up the kingdom of God on earth, they believe the same thing in Islam. It's the same exact concept. And I said, and yet you don't talk about that. I said, have you seen what's going on down in Texas? Like, you wake up one day and suddenly they're building this massive community down there. Do you not understand what's going on in New York right now? Do you not understand what's going on? And I said, and here's the crazy thing about it, is Christians, they're trying to do this by having crusades and converting people, and the Muslims are doing it, and their plan is rock solid because they're going to outpopulate us. You know, where Christian women are having 1.7 children, Muslim women are having 5, 6, and 7 children.
You know, and part of the problem, even that problem kind of goes back to Christian identity. They were so focused against the Catholic Church and the Jews that heavily influenced people's thinking against, this is the Catholic Church, this is the people who did the Spanish Inquisition. And when people think about religious warfare, they kind of stop there. They don't go back in time and realize that religious wars have, read the Old Testament, religious wars have been since the dawn of time. People want to take control of other humans. That's the way it works. And it's usually the bad guys that are wanting to take control of the other humans. And, you know, God is saying, we want peace. We want to live and help our brother. I love your neighbor as yourself kind of religion. Well, that's not what's being created here. And the sad part is that's embedded into what is called Christianity today. We want this dominionism because that's our pride, our heritage.
Well, we can be in control. It's all about control, isn't it, really? And that's one of the things I was trying to point out to these reporters. I said, so you think dominion is a uniquely Christian thing that's sort of happening in the last few years, like in the last couple decades or the last couple generations? I said, do you understand human history? You know, as you just said earlier, I said, from the beginning of time, when the first humans were on this earth, until now, there's always been a consistent dynamic in play. And that's that humans want to control other humans. Whether it's in your family, right? Whether it's at work, whether it's in your city, whether it's in your nation, whether it's the globe, humans want to control other humans. The ones like you were talking about that are driven by selfish ambition and greed, they want to control the masses, right? Because they want to control the wealth. They want the stature. So what's driving them is this overwhelming passion for status and stuff, right? So as I said to him, I go, what do you think Nebuchadnezzar was doing in Babylon? Do you think he was happy just having a little city? No, he was trying to conquer everyone else. I said, what do you think Cyrus was doing in Persia? I said, how did Alexander get his name? How did Alexander get the name great? He goes, well, what do you mean? And I go, why is he great? He's great because he conquered everyone else. Right? I go, we have a guy called Alexander the Great doing the thing that everybody thinks is bad. Right? It's like, I go, you guys, this is the very thing you guys are all complaining about, and yet he's still Alexander the Great. I go, what was Julius Caesar doing? Why was he over there in what's now modern Europe conquering tribes? I go, dominion, this need to control other people, to go, it's always been there. Stop it. It's like you're trying to make this thing a uniquely you know, Christian right-wing thing. And I go, this has been human nature. I go, what do you think the Third Reich is? I don't know. It's the third thousand-year reign. I have a buddy who introduced me to Colonel Eugene Byrd. Colonel Byrd was one of the first guys over the Remagen Bridge, which was the first entry into Germany in Second World War. Colonel Byrd went on to be the commandant at Spandau Prison. So I enjoyed some evenings with him in Berlin. And guess who he had in Spandau? Rudolf Hess and Albert Speer.
Wow.
So I got a sort of an inside view of what Albert Speer was doing, because Albert Speer was the architect, right? You can go to Germany today and there are still buildings that he designed that are there that they can't get rid of. Like, they've tried to blow every piece of memorabilia from the Nazi, you know, decade there, we'll call it, up. Like, they don't want anything to remain, right? And yet they can't even blow this stuff up. He built it so well. And when you ask him why, what was his mandate? It needs to last 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Right? So Hitler's dominionism, right? Himmler had dominionism. What do you think Joseph Stalin was doing? Right? So that's what I mean. I have a problem when I hear, you know, this single, very narrow perspective on dominionism as though somehow it's this uniquely right-wing Christian thing. And I'm like, wait a minute, this has been human history for, you know, as far back as you can go.
It's funny too. I watch the comment feeds whenever we put stuff out, and you can talk about dominionism and you'll find Pentecostal people who haven't really adopted the New Apostolic Reformation ways. They will just blast it and condemn it and say, that's why we stuck with Pentecostalism. We're not like this. Right. And I don't comment back, but I'm like, do you not know your history? If you go back, John Alexander Dowie, what did he do? He created the Theocratic Party. Look at the NAR today. What they have done is they basically created a theocratic party. Dowie wanted to take control of the nation. First, he took over Chicago and basically owned Chicago. When he left Chicago, his void is what allowed the Chicago Mafia to come and take control. Because of Dowie, we had the mob. Then he moves to Zion City, and he basically wants to create the city of Zion built in the United States. Built on British Israelism,
right?
Heaven on earth. And they were like you mentioned, the Third Reich, they were selling 1,000-year leases to their properties because of this. Well, he goes and they tried to forcibly take over New York City. So he goes in these, you can see these caravans of people going to New York door to door, banging on their door, you will be converted. And how's that not dominionism? That's what he's trying to do, take dominion of New York City. And his intent was really to take over the nation with his theocratic party. But then he went crazy and it died out. And when it died out, Charles Fox Parham and John G. Lake, all these other people came into Zion trying to take over his empire because they wanted the dominion that Dowie was establishing and creating, and they wanted his financial empire.
You want to get in trouble?
I always want to get in trouble.
Okay, so I'm going to go there on something that's bothered me. And again, when I share some of this stuff, I don't always have conclusions. I have ponderings, meaning that this is in process. So much of the dominion idea, right, is rooted in the Old Testament. And it's rooted in a worldview that the Israelites had, right, about their destiny, right? And that one day this Messiah was going to come and they were going to rule the world, right? So it's rooted in that. But here's the paradox of this, which has always been fascinating to me. What people don't seem to grasp is the unified nation of Israel, i.e. the 12 tribes together as a unified nation. Modern Israel has lasted longer than that little unified kingdom existed, right? So it's sort of weird to me because there's like, you read all the, in fact, what it reminds me of is the Irish, right? The luck of the Irish,
yeah.
Right? All this stuff. When have the Irish ever been lucky? Like, they're one of the most oppressed people groups in Europe, right? It's like in their oppression, they created this hope, right? This, you know, that one day this is all going to change and, you know, we're going to be lucky, you know, but they were never lucky. Even, and yet there's this whole thing about shamrocks and luck and all this kind of stuff. Well, you think about the Israelites, right? So you got these 12 tribes, you know, these people that, you know, supposedly come out of Egypt, who are being led by a half-breed guy. And what I mean by a half-breed is that Joshua comes from the tribe of Ephraim. And Ephraim's mother was Egyptian and his father was Jewish. Or Hebrew, we'll say, right? So in other words, you've got a biracial, if you want to use that word, even though it technically isn't biracial, but I'm just saying two completely different cultures who's leading this group of people in, right? And they get across the Jordan, and of course, they're in what later becomes the tribe of Ephraim's land. But like, they're proportioning out all this land and chasing out the native, right? So they did the same thing the colonialists did when they came to America, right? And we pushed all the indigenous people out. Well, they did the same thing. They came in there. But again, everybody goes, well, that's wrong. You know, what they did was wrong. No, that's what you did. There was no rule that, you know what I mean? It's like, I get really frustrated with people trying to put modern, you know, worldviews on ancient history. Everybody was doing it to everyone else. There, you know, the only rule in the ancient world was power. Right? If I got more power than you, so might is right. In the ancient world, might is right, right? So they come in there and they do all that, and they put all their stuff in a big tent, right? In Shiloh, in Ephraim. And then they all go out, right? But for years, they're like, you know, 12 little independent kind of tribal things until Saul comes along and he puts them all together. And then David takes over. And of course, here's the problem. You've got this 12 ragtag tribes that decide to come together because they need to become a nation. Why do they need to become a nation? Why don't they stay independent? The reason is south of them is an ancient empire with massive armies and great wealth who can pulverize them at any moment.
Yeah.
Right? What's north of them? Another ancient kingdom called Assyria, right? Who's got massive armies and great wealth. What's to the east of them? Babylon. What also great, right? They're this little puny, and this is what I don't think people understand, because you read the Old Testament, and it's glorious Israel. Right? Everything's glorious Israel. I listen to Sunday morning preachers and then it's all the glory of Israel, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, you guys, this is a minority group, right? This is a little bitty group. The stories, once you understand who they are and the limitations they had, the victories they won are even more miraculous, right? Because they're way outgunned, right? It's one of these, you know, like, you know, the Dirty Dozen movies, right? Yeah. It's like, they're like this little group of, you know, that basically holds their own. Well, they try to anyways, but that's because they're between three great forces, right? But here's what gets interesting is David takes over, right? He becomes king. And he ends up in trying to unify and make them a nation, creating the offense that later would cause the whole thing to fall apart, right? And you know what it was? He moved the tabernacle from the tribe of Ephraim, where it had been between, you know, where they had made their covenant with God, to Jerusalem, to his tribe. And he created an offense, right? Because we're the keeper of the tent up here, right? But, you know, for the sake of holding everyone together. So he dies, and then it gets even weirder because the firstborn son of David doesn't even become king. How does Solomon become the king? He's like the bastard son, right? He's the affair son, right? It's like, oh my gosh, this gets so weird, right? So, and I'm only trying to say this because I believe that the Bible is the most scrub piece of literature on Sunday morning in the world. It's like it all of a sudden gets reduced down to little, you know, primary school, Noah and his little archie, and we all sing songs. We have this idealized view of this whole story, right? So what ends up happening is that Solomon's son takes over Rehoboam, and the whole thing splits, right? And then when Jesus, by the time you get to the time of Jesus, it's like all divided into three areas, and they hate each other. Say, there is no glorious united Israel that lasted for 1,000 years. It lasted less than 70 years. I think modern Israel, we're in 72 years now. So it's so interesting to me because the modern Israel is far more sustainable than ancient Israel was. And yet we have all this sort of idyllic viewpoint of this thing.
I'm glad that you brought that up because for me, a person who grew up in this weird, isolated cult, I read my Bible. I read it when I was in the cult. And then after I left it, I read it over and over. I've mentioned this several times. I just actually just had this conversation earlier, I guess it was yesterday, with a person. Once I started entering into mainstream churches, I struggled to fit in because I knew what the Bible said. And right. I would hear them preaching, and I was like, wait a minute. Do you guys not know what it is, the book that you're preaching from? Because, right. Like you said, they're glazing over and they're telling the happy points. And anybody who knows about history knows that if you only talk about the good stuff, you're going to eventually repeat the bad stuff. But here's the bigger problem. What they have done, they have changed the nature of the Bible itself. And let me explain this because I know we'll get pushback for this one. So I'm gonna put this out. Yeah.
That's why I said, do you want to go down this road? Because we're going to get some pushback on this.
Yeah. But if you read the Bible and you know what's in it, if you know what the intents of the authors, when they're writing the books, they're very clear what their intention is. If you read it as a book, not as a piece together like these I don't know if you've seen the guys who are doing the serial killings and they take these little snippets out of magazines. Yeah. That's the kind of preaching that they're doing. They're taking these little snippets.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson did that. That's how he made his Bible. He took all the stuff he didn't like out of it.
Well, so that's what they're doing, but it changes the nature of the book because the book is very clear. The authors are very clear in what they describe as learning from their mistakes. Right. So God actually commissions some of these things to happen. They commissions the war, go down to this country, you'll take over this country, etc. And Paul calls the whole thing is basically a lesson. They're learning a lesson. Mm. So God sends them out, the kingdom rise, they fall into sin, the kingdom falls. They're learning a lesson from it. And each time they try to claim dominion over some other nation, that's what happens. They try to claim dominion, some guy gets the big head and they start to think that he's something, and then he falls to idolatry and the whole thing falls down over and over and over and over again. You can read the book of Kings. It's talking about kingdom rises, kingdom falls, kingdom rises, kingdom falls.
Well, and that's why, to your point, I don't think a lot of people understand is the Old Testament as we know it was actually pulled together while they were in Babylon in captivity. The second most holy book in Judaism is the Talmud, but it's called the Babylonian Talmud. And the reason was is they were people in a foreign country trying to hang on to their culture, right? And so the scribes, the priests and the scribes and the scholars in Babylon were trying to like, hey, we got to write all this stuff down. Like we need to preserve our culture, right? And I get it. And it's not any different than when the African slaves came to America, right? Trying to preserve their African culture. so much of black church is they don't, if they have never been to Africa, they don't understand that this goes there. This ties into that. Your ancestors came over here, and a lot of this ties into their tribal backgrounds. You know, the songs, right? The songs, they all, the biblical songs, they so identified with the Israelites, right? Who were basically getting the crap beat out of them constantly, right? But, you know, and people get upset with me, but I'll give you just one little thing. If you'll notice, it says in Genesis, it says Abraham from Chaldea. Well, the problem is that Chaldea didn't exist at the time of Abraham, but Chaldea does while they're all in Babylon. So somebody who's pulling all of this, these stories together, right, and translating this, uses a modern, this is one of the big clues, right? They give you, it's, they're using a present example that people would understand, like, oh, Abraham's from Chaldea now, you know, right, in 700 BC, you know what I mean? So, yeah, this gets really interesting for me, you know, because it's like, okay. but here's what I do. Just if you want to know where I get my perspective from, it's my point of view that if you just read the Bible by itself, while you may find yourself getting inspired, and it's, you know, and there's great wisdom and knowledge and understanding, there's so much in there. It's rich.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. I'm very careful who I have the conversation with, so I don't know that I've really talked about this much in the public, but you're right. If you have the context of what happened in history and you have the context of the Bible, you get a better understanding of what the people were talking about. Yeah. And the equivalent for people who don't understand this, think back to the Civil War and think about some person who's writing about the details that are happening at one specific battle in one of the battle states of the Civil right. War, and he's describing what it was like, what the air was like, what the city was like, how they used to go to the market, and suddenly the market is demolished because right. Well, you get a better understanding of that battle because you've got another perspective looking in. The more perspectives right. The better you get. Well, what has happened is, in my opinion, people have preached the Bible delicately and avoided anything that people might find offensive. But mm-hmm. That's not the way history works. You want to read the good and the bad so that you don't repeat the bad. And there came a time after kingdoms rose and kingdoms fall, when Babylon invades and they basically destroy the temple, the libraries, everything that the mm-hmm. children of Israel had as far as their their heritage. They were creating cultural genocide to the children of Israel. Mm-hmm. And they took the wise people from Israel. What does this mean? The people mm-hmm. who could read and write were going, like the Hebrew boys were going because they could read and write.
Yeah.
Well, after cultural genocide, what do? You start to piece back together your history because you just lost your culture. Yeah. And they're in one of the greatest libraries of the ancient world, in the Babylonian library. How do you do this? How do you piece together something that has been obliterated? And I think that's the thing that people miss. You'll find atheists who say, well, I read the Epic of Gilgamesh, and I see suddenly, wait a minute, the Bible copied the Epic of Gilgamesh. And you find the fundamentalist, hardcore evangelicals that say, no, this can't be copied. And they don't understand their own history. They don't understand right. that it was obliterated. They had to piece back together. So there, I can picture the people going through the libraries and trying to find, well, what matches what I remember reading in our holy books? And that word holy books, I think that has became obscured over time. Because whenever people say the Bible is the word of God, it takes a different meaning than what they actually meant by a holy book. This was mm-hmm. a holy book of our culture, of our laws, our statutes, mm-hmm. of our history. And it included both the good and the bad history. It included everything. This was that was their holy book. That was their culture. So, like you said, Babylon invaded, wiped out their culture. They had no culture. They start piecing together as best they can, and then start to continue to build what became the holy books. And that, I'm not making anything up here. You can read that directly in the Bible. You can read that this is happening. And you can read from some of the other ancient cultures that this is happening. So this is nothing that Bob and I are making up. But if you remove that element of history, what you end up with is you end up with a different Bible than they were even reading.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's my personality, or maybe it's life lessons. I'm not really sure. But one of my struggles within the religious Christian religious world is this diametric mindset of you're either right or wrong. You know, that's where fundamentalism kind of, it bothers me a bit, because it's like this mentality. If I'm right, that makes you wrong. So therefore, I am right and you are wrong. And what does it do? It's like it reduces everything down to this simple little thing. And then we end up having conflict. And then, as we know from history, we start killing each other over our conflict, right? Because, you know, I'm right and I'm God's man, so I have the right to kill you. And that's always bothered me. And part of it is growing up and getting married, right? What happens when you get married? You get to live with a woman. And as we all know, when a man lives with a woman, you can look at the same situation and come up with two completely different conclusions of what is happening in this moment, right?
The difference is her understanding is right and yours is wrong, buddy.
Right. But what I'm saying is there's two perspectives, right? In other words, and there can be different, right? So then when I got into the whole racial reconciliation world, right? And you're in there with people that are just been beating the crap out of each other and killing each other, right? And you start listening and you begin to realize that they're both right. So what do you do with that? Right? And so that's where I begin to realize, and I was just telling your friend this week, one of my favorite verses in the whole Bible is when Paul's writing to the Ephesians and he talks about the manifold wisdom of God, the many faceted wisdom of God, right? And you begin to realize that, wait a minute, God's diverse. God's got many facets to him, right? But the thing that makes him so amazing is somehow he's able to hold all these facets together, right? And handle it. Where we can't, we seem to like, it's my facet versus your facet. Right? It's like we get into these kinds. So that's where I struggle a lot of times. And I don't even like getting into some of these religious conversations, because suddenly you just see people go into this defensive posture, right? And it's like they're threatened by a different perspective. The way I look at it is, see, people, and I've struggled with this my whole life, is that people immediately, if you say something different, they get on the defense and it's us versus you, right? It's this kind of thing. My brain goes, how does this fit with that?
Yeah.
See, I look at it like a puzzle, right? It's like, okay, you got a piece and I got a piece. And why are we assuming that these things are confrontational and conflicting? What if they're part of the same thing, right? And so that's been my struggle. So that's what happens with me even when I'm reading my Bible. I realize that, wait a minute here, this is a single perspective. Right? And again, so much of the Old Testament, just so people understand, is history. It's a giant history book. It's a people telling a story. But what's interesting is they have found ancient writings in Assyria talking about the same battles that the Bible writes about. And there's an Assyrian perspective that's very different than this, right? And people are like, well, they're wrong. Well, it's kind of like what just happened in Iran, right? There's a Western version of what happened, and then there's the Iranian version of what happened, right? I mean, you know, it's like you're sitting there and they're going, we won. And we're going, no, we won, right? And it's like, wait a minute, this is happening at the same time, right? And this has been going on for thousands of years. So that's why, you know, like I said, I try to look at this, you know, it's like, I know this sounds funny, but I like to get up at the bird's eye view, like a helicopter, and circle around the whole thing. You know what I'm talking about? I think you understand because you're a little bit like I am. It's like, I want to look at this from all the angles. So I go look at the history books. I go look at all the other stuff that's out there that adds more facets, more color, more dimension to this story, right? And that's where you begin to discover that so much of what's preached from pulpits is actually completely uncontextualized. And the reason why we get into such bizarre thinking about stuff is because we don't do our homework and we don't really look at the bigger picture here, right? And so we suddenly take a little thing like this, you know? I mean, there's a reason why there's 40,000 denominations out there, right? Well, he sprinkled. That's wrong. He's going to hell because he didn't get dunked, right? Oh, no. The elder so-and-so can't baptize him. It's got to be pastor. Oh, we got to start another church now. You know what I mean? And I mean, the whole of Christianity is littered by people fighting over the most stupid rudimentary things. And it's just like, God, are we children here? Like, can we grow up? It's like, oh, I don't, you know, what's the whole thing? I'm taking my ball and going home. Go start my own church. I'm going to go start my own denomination.
This is another problem that I have. This whole world is confusing to me. After leaving this isolationist group, I just don't understand it. Like you, I like the bird's eye view. I like to know everything that I can about something. And here's where it gets really scary for me. There are really, really, really smart people that are my peers in this Christian world. They understand the necessity for a bird's eye view. Right. But the moment in which you mentioned the Bible with the bird's eye view, can't do that.
I know.
It's got to be Bible only.
I know.
The way that I try to explain it is picture the military. And picture you're a private in the military, and the general tells you, go and fight this battle over here. And the general knows that you're going to lose that battle. And you go into it, your only perspective is that you're going to fight. You have no idea that the general knows you're going to lose that battle, and you may lose men. Mm-hmm. But because you lose that battle, and because so many enemy forces are focused over here, he can go invade this other territory and win the war. So your battle is just as important, but in the grand scheme of things, you're going to lose. Your perspective is somebody who's got this little tiny perspective. Well, the way they preach the Bible, where they cut out all of the things that are very important history and just glaze over it and give you these little perspectives, what they're doing is they're taking God and they're putting him down at the private level. God doesn't have control over this enemy nation. God doesn't have control enough to let the people see that they can learn by their mistakes. They've taken God and they've diminished him. And then take that to a broader scale. If you love history like I do, and you also love religious history like I do, ancient mythologies, etc., look at the shift in the world from the perspective of the way that Christianity is taught by these people who ignore histories. They have a God that's not in control. But what if God and all of these other nations and religions and cultures, what if God is shifting them slightly towards truth in the same way, knowing that they're in error, in the same way that the children of Israel were in error? Because this is happening on a global scale, and God said for God loved the whole world. It doesn't say for God loved just this little tiny people. God loved the world. And so you have to believe that if there is a God that is that powerful, that is that all-knowing, that can shift entire cultures, we'll look at how those cultures shifted. You know, there are instances of child sacrifice in the world today, but on the global scale that we have, it's minuscule compared to what it was in the ancient world. All of these things have shifted gradually towards getting better. Now, can I say that, you know, some ancient culture or some other religion is, that's where you're going to go to find God? I can't say that. But can you say that God is in control of it all? Yes. And that's really the problem that I have with dominionism, because what they've done is they've taken God from the general level down to, well, he's a private and he needs us to be in control of these other nations, and we're going to dictate to them the way that they should be. That is taking God out of the out of control into this little tiny scale.
God, my head is exploding right now. So I'm like 10 things popping in my head, but just to your point here, Mike and I got a big fight over this in the 80s, because he kept telling everyone there's going to be this end time revival. This was his mentality. There's going to be an end time revival. You know, Bob Jones was feeding this. There's going to be 1 billion souls saved, and Christians are going to take over the world. I mean, I'm simplifying this, but that's basically the whole mentality, right? Which isn't new, but again, that's what was driving him. And I said to him one day, I said, so who's going to be like running these nations? And you know what he said? He goes, oh, the apostles and prophets. And I just went, oh my God. I remember just inside of me going, oh my God. And I went, hey, Mike, we already did that. It was called the Catholic Church. It was a disaster. And he just looked at me and he was like, you know, he was like, yeah, all confused. And I go, we already had the church ruling government. It doesn't work. I go, I don't know anywhere in human history where church leaders running civic government has ever worked. They're not qualified. They don't have the skill sets. They're, you know, I go, I mean, I just could not get my head around the thinking, right? It's just like, what do you mean? Like, you think that's a good thing? You know? But again, it's the theocracy, right? It's this whole theocracy, which Islam has, right? So it's, anyway, so that's one thing. The second thing to our point here about diversity and different perspectives. I don't know how many people that's listening may be aware of this, but during the time of Jesus, there's a reason why there's a conflict between, you know, southern Israel, you know, which is Judea, right, and Samaria. And you know what the conflict was? The conflict was the same conflict that David created 1,000 years earlier.
Yeah.
Right? Who were the Samaritans? The Samaritans had their own temple. They had their own scriptures. They thought the Judeans and David screwed it up, because when Joshua brought the tabernacle in and set it up in Ephraim, in Samaria, what was then now Samaria, that was what God wanted. And David missed God, right? So this is so funny, because you're like, you know, again, because the Judeans controlled the narrative, right? Our viewpoint is David, you know, did the right thing. Samaritans didn't think like that. Samaritans thought that David did the wrong thing, that he disobeyed God, right? And that David was full of pride, because David wanted to be all about, I'm going to build my, you know, what David looked around and what all the other nations had, which made them a unique nation, was they all had a palace for their king and a temple for their God, right? That's what you do. You build a national temple for your God and you build a national palace for your king. And you know that now you're legit. And that's exactly, David follows the same pattern that everybody else has got. And that's what he does. Well, he makes the Samaritans or the Ephraimites, they're mad. Like, you, so what do? They recreate it. They go, you screwed up. And they, so what does Jesus do? He goes and befriends Samaritans, right? He does the very opposite of what we do today theologically, right? We get in, you know, we do what the Judeans do, right? We hate these people so much. They're apostate. In fact, we hate them so much, we're not even going to walk on their soil to get to Galilee. We're going across the Jordan and up the other side and back across, And we're going to take the long way because these people are apostate. Right? Jesus doesn't think like that. Right? And so this has always intrigued me. It's like, wait a minute. He's crossing the boundary, like the religious boundary. He's over there with the heretics. Right? That fascinates me. I mean, it just challenges me to my core, right? It's like, wait a minute. You know, we're over here killing each other because I'm right and you're wrong. And Jesus going over there and healing the people that are the heretics. And I just think there's something there that the modern church world, you know, needs to, you know, rally back around. Because I think that's a transformational way of living. And we've lost all that, you know. That's why we got 40,000 denominations. Because I'm right and you're wrong, John. Didn't you know that?
We have lost it. And, you know, so take that a step further. I'm one of these people that I think architecturally, if you're talking to a Christian and you describe what you just described, because their mindset is that the way the Bible was written, it was written as a all perfect entity describing only the good things. That's literally how it's taught in, right, these Christian churches.
It's scrubbed.
It's scrubbed. But yeah, because they've been taught, and you mentioned the word King David, what happens is it sets off the programming that's in their head, and they think, oh, I can relate to this. So I see that there are two descendants of King David, and God loves both of them. So what Bob said makes sense. Take it back further, all the way back to Adam and Eve. Every culture, every civilization that has risen in time, if you believe the Bible and you believe the book of Genesis, it all came from Adam and Eve. And God, it's God's creation. Does not God love the people of the other parts of his creation? Is he not leading them in directions? They don't have the same equivalent of a holy book that lasted through time like we have, but can we not say that God is going to lead them, hopefully, into all truth? In the way that the Bible is written, if you read it cover to cover, only for what it says, ignore what everybody else says, just read it for what it says, you can come to that conclusion, for God loved the whole world. Yeah. But if you read it from the perspective of these Christian ministers, quote-unquote Christian ministers that whitewash the whole thing, no, that was a warring nation, God said to invade them, God said to kill them, so therefore they're the bad guys.
Yeah.
That's how they look at it, and that's not the way, if you read the Bible, that's not what God says, that's not what is supposed to be, but it limits God, and it makes God a narcissist. We had the conversation about narcissists before. They like to do this, they like to change the personality of God to match their own flaws, and I think if you take anything away from this conversation, which this is going to get me in all kinds of trouble, thank you, Bob, but...
Sorry.
But if you follow out to its logical conclusion...
We're just thinking out loud here, John.
Thinking out loud. These people, because they don't understand God, the only way they can understand them is to put their own flaws into the nature of God and decrease his power so that they can understand it. And when you do that, what kind of a box are you putting God in?
Well, I've maintained to all of the people in my circle that death is going to be the greatest revelation of our lives. Because I think once we transition out of these human limitations in our bodies and we actually see God, we're going to realize, oh my God, I got so much stuff wrong. Right? It's like, think about this. All of our descriptions of God are human. Right? In other words, we've taken this, I mean, you're talking about this guy created universes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, do you understand who this is? And somehow we've reduced him down to human sexuality and human emotions and human thinking, right? Because we're so puny in what we know, right? That we can't think outside of it. We just can't get outside the box. And I'm just, that's why even in these discussions, I'm always saying, I'm thinking out loud here, but I don't hold anything like dogmatic, because I know I'm going to get my mouth shut when I die, because I'm going to be going, oh my gosh, I so did not get this. Right?
And so, the funny part about everything that you said, this guy created universes.
Oh, there you go. Oops. This being. Yeah, exactly. You know, so one other thing, and I know we got to wind this up, but this all ties back into what I've been dealing with my book in leaders. People do not seem to have the capacity to understand that good people do bad things and bad people do good things. This isn't a simple black and white, yes or no, good or evil. Meaning that I have a younger generation in particular who's so hurt by Mike Watt did. They think he's the son of Satan, right? I mean, they just think he's evil personified. And the reason is because they don't know him like I do. I've known him. I knew him since we were 18 and 19 years old. I know his heart. I know what's in there. But like so many other guys that have come through my counseling or consulting thing, they're good guys who are very broken and do bad things and hate themselves because they do bad things. And they're like Paul who goes, I don't want to do bad things, but I do bad things. And it's not that simple. I just wish people would not be so absolute and dogmatic in their thinking and realize this is manifold. It's many faceted. We live in the world of dynamic tensions, good, evil, up, down, in, out, right? There's all of these words over here, but we're like the little slide thing on a balance thing on your stereo in the old days where you used to slide it. It's like in some situations it's this and then it slides over here. It's not static. So, you know, just, I just think, and the key to all of this is, I think what's in your heart, or at least what I was hearing from you, is humility. It's like, God, let's have some humility here and not assume we know everything. Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it comes down to the point where you have to understand that there are extremes on both sides.
Yeah.
Because whenever people demonize Mike, what they're eliminating, in my opinion, which I don't know Mike, I don't know his medical history, anything like this, but I do know and understand the mental health issues of the nation. And I know that there are some very good people who got executed for very bad things, but something happened in their head and they literally could not stop what they were doing. Yeah. And should they have died, you know, I don't know if I'm for the death penalty, but they definitely should have been taken away from the public that can be harmed. Should people, if you're on the NAR, well, you restore these apostles because they're apostles. That's wrong. You're putting them in a position where they can hurt people again. But on the flip side of this, if you demonize them, what you're doing, and this is a conversation for another podcast. I won't go too far.
But we never got to the third piece here. We're going to have to do that
next. We'll do that next.
We just keep going down these money trails.
Yeah, but it's mental health. Whenever you demonize people who do bad things and you turn them into the devil's got them, this guy was bad from the beginning, all of this stuff, you make the people lose perspective of mental health issues. And then what happens is, say one of their children has a mental health issue or they themselves get into a mental health issue. Well, now they're afraid to go get help because I've been demonized. I'm doing this thing that I can't control.
Or you got a demon.
And I won't go too far with that. I have a huge problem with it. We'll talk about it in another podcast. Thank you for doing this.
Hey, by the way, just PS here. Did you see that one of the leaders of the NAR is running for governor of California?
I did. It's unbelievable.
But what's driving that?
Dominionism, right?
Well, it's just, you know, that's God's mandate to us. We're supposed to take over and control everyone, you know? See, and again, God, that we could keep talking about, but this was another seminal worldview shift for me. And what I began to realize was that religion, this was years ago, religious leaders drive people to conform to the will of God. Jesus drew people. And it's completely different, right? Christian institutional religion wants to control everyone and force their behavior. Jesus transformed people from the inside out. Transformation of the soul is the soul of transformation. He worked that way, and he used water and bread analogies and said, you're thirsty, you're hungry, I've come to me, right? He drew people. And those are two completely different mindsets. Right now, the Dominion guys are trying to drive people. You know, we're going to get in control, and you're all going to be forced to conform to our will.
Yeah. It's a totally different religion, but anyway, we could talk for 2 hours. We'll let it go. If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR. And if you want to read more about Mike Bickle and IHOP KC, you can read Some Say They Blundered, Breaking My Decades of Silence on Mike Bickle, The Kansas City Prophets, and The International House of Prayer.